Welcome back to Hard Facts on 92.3 Nigeria Info. 12 minutes gone past 4. My name is Constance Mega. All right, at this time we will get to talk about something that has to do with education. Okay. So UBEC, that's the Universal Basic Education Commission, says that about 50% of Nigerian students, of pupils rather, sit on the floor. So more like basic furniture is unavailable. In 50% of schools, rather, we do not have furniture. 50%. Now, when you say 50% of anything, it means half. Half. That is just amazing. Well, let me just read out the particular story here for you. I have it. I think all the national dailies carried it, but I'm looking at it now from the Vanguard. The Universal Basic Education Commission, UBEC, has said about 50% of schools in Nigeria lack basic furniture. Executive Secretary of the Commission, Hamid Boboy, who said this in Abuja, regretted that basic education pupils sit on the floor to take lessons. Well, according to him, emerging constraints in basic education delivery in the country might necessitate an increase in the consolidated revenue funds from the current 2% to 4%. Now, he also buttressed his position for an increase in funding to the security challenges bedeviling the country, insisting that the rising students' population also poses the urgent need for teaching facilities. And then there's something else he actually said that I want to bring to our attention. Now, he said that while the children of the rich, who are merely 20% of the population, can afford private schools, the underprivileged, 80%, are stuck with the public institutions. Well, joining me for this conversation is a public affairs analyst, Mr. Isaac Uwadiono. You're welcome to the show, Mr. Isaac.
Good afternoon, Rivers people. Good afternoon, Nigeria.
All right, so Mr. Isaac, 50% of schools in Nigeria lack basic furniture. So I want to get your take, first of all, on that.
Well, thank you so much. I think there's a need to really define what we mean by the word furniture.
All right.
For the much I remember, my dictionary tells me that when you talk about furniture, you are looking at fittings that are necessary to make a place comfortable or suitable for living. And now, when you look at that, sometimes we narrow it down to maybe chairs, tables, and others. But a typical classroom setting has other things that we may consider as furniture. A very good example is the chalkboard, which is the primary point of contact between the teacher and the learner. Another thing to look out for are places where school materials are kept. For instance, you may call it cupboard, it may be anything, but as long as it has a place that can accommodate books and learning materials or instructional aids, they are all part and parcel of the school furniture. Now, with this definition, I think that those who actually came up, especially UBEC, that came up with that particular news, may be very, very conservative in their estimation.
Why do you think so?
By a particular body, the Bridge School, that over 70% of Nigerian pupils actually learn under very harsh and painful situation without furniture. But if we go with what UBEC is saying, which is the umbrella body for the recruitment of teacher, furnishing of schools, and of course, especially primary school. Now, I would like us to go into the area of blame. But I wonder why it took them so long a time to discover that it is now that there is a deficiency in our primary school education. My dear Constance, let me tell you. Over the years, since 1973, when we started the practice of universal primary education, one basic thing that has actually functioned on a recurring decimal is the deficiency of learning material, especially furniture. At a time, it became a norm that teachers would actually take their children out, put them under the trees, and teach. At that particular point in time, the government had no money, but that was the period the national government was maintaining oil boom, of which our primary schools would have actually been furnished, and then, you know, the right mindset would have been inculcated into these children. But it continued, and it lingered until now that government has no resources. Yeah, it will please you to note that the United Nations actually said that the budget of education in any country should be between 26% of the national budget. But ironically, we don't even spend up to 6% of our national budget on education. That is what is responsible for persistent ASUU strike. It's responsible for, you know, primary school being shut down. It is also responsible for the reason why the new state government had to take over, you know, the running of primary school, and they are now reduced to pay mere basis of a salary. So the estimation or whatever is being said about primary school, I agree with you in total. That is exactly the state education in Nigeria. And I can tell you that it may likely not improve if we don't take a drastic action.
This is interesting. Now, let's look at UBEC, for instance. Now, the body, UBEC, that's the Universal Basic Education Commission, is a Nigerian government's agency that has the mandate to formulate and coordinate all programs of the Universal Basic Education Program and prescribe the minimum standards for basic education in Nigeria. Now, UBEC also was actually established by the Compulsory Free Universal Basic Education and Other Related Matters Act of 2004. And the job is to eradicate illiteracy, ignorance, and poverty, as well as to stimulate and accelerate national development, political consciousness, and national integration to fulfill the national philosophy and goals of education, which underlines with the country's aspiration to social, economic, and political development. Now, with all of these, that UBEC is saddled with, would you say that UBEC as an agency has even lived up to expectation?
Well, let's cut it from this way. At first sight, it is easier to conclude that they have not lived up to their agency, to their function, you know, as far as the national policy on education is concerned. But if we take that line, we may be sounding as if we are from another world.
Yeah.
What is obvious and is true about UBEC is this. It depends on who is at the top. What is the philosophy on top? Now, I'll give you a very good example. At the time, what was reigning in Nigeria is that if a teacher has not obtained TLCN, the teacher is not eligible to teach. And that has died a natural death. Now, the person who is on top drives the policy. UBEC has not failed. I must say here that it has not failed. It actually depends on the money they have at their disposal for the execution of this job, on the one hand. But there are also some political people who are actually involved in the day-to-day administration of UBEC, who are actually concerned with how much is given to UBEC. You know, have we forgotten the case of Farouk Lawan not too long, that he was actually in charge of education under House of Rep, and it was the UBEC money that actually sent him out. I think recently he was sentenced. That's Farouk Lawan. You know, so UBEC may not have failed, but UBEC is actually operating under very tight conditions, such that there is nothing that you can actually see that can improve the condition of UBEC. Because one, if the man at the top is always saying that the budget for that particular agency of government is not available until October, there is nothing you will do. What you find is a situation where people come to office in the morning and they loiter around from January to September. And when the fund is released, they're actually making preparation for the next project. And so nobody comes out to actually say, what did you do with the money that was spent in the past? That's the case of UBEC.
So, this is more like the agency is just there and anything goes. If they're not getting the funding as they ought, however things pan out, it just goes.
One of the issues we have always had against government agencies is that the bureaucratic process, what you call nepotism in government, is affecting the performance of government institutions. This same thing that is happening to, to Quebec. You will hardly find it in advanced countries of the world where systems, and directions are in place. For instance, now, you know, that for you to be appointed into a federal agency that is connected to education, you must have contact. It's a Nigerian thing. You understand? It's a Nigerian thing. The same thing applies. There are some people who have actually served in the ministry that are eligible, but when they get to the point of appointment, actually you call up so many factors. One of them is ethnicity. We call up a factor such as religion. Now, the person who is on top and whose religion is actually the person that controls the day-to-day policy and controls the day-to-day actions of the subordinates under him. That's exactly the scenario.
So, how are the states? Because the states also have something called SUBEB, that's States Universal Basic Education Boards. So, what then is their job?
Let me explain something to you. You know, the federal system of government has issues. The issue of most federal establishments is duplication of functions. I don't know that I understand that. Now, okay. Under our constitution, education is not just in the exclusive list. Education is in the concurrent list. Now, under the concurrent list, the federal government legislates on education, the state government legislates on education, and even the local government has a say in the day-to-day administration of institutions and agencies. That is why they carry out their routine inspection and supervision in schools. So, the establishment of UBEC inside the state does not necessarily mean that they are loitering around or perhaps they don't have a function. Actually, they are actually supposed to interpret and complement the efforts of the federal agency such that education will have a broad outlook, such that what is done in River State is the same thing that is done in Zamfara State or perhaps in Borno State. So the federal government does not have all the necessary manpower that is required to do the job, but they formulate the policy. This same policy is passed to the state, and then the state government is supposed to bring it down to the grassroots for the people to implement. That is exactly the role of the state agency of UBEC. And so they are told that whatever is done at the federal level, replicate it in the state. But you know what? In most states, it's not possible as a result of paucity of funds.
Wow, I was actually going to ask you how come, why can't it be possible? Well, Mr. Isaac, we'll be back shortly, and when we return, we'll be taking a look at, of course, I think you mentioned it before now, the benchmark for budgeting when it comes to education based on what UNESCO said about that. Cool. Let's go on that commercial break now. When we come back, we're still here. It's Hard Facts on 92.3 Nigeria Info. Do stay tuned.
We take off with the biggest conversations, with an exchange of opinions and ideas on the Morning Crossfire. Settle you into your day when we say, hello, Port Hackett.
Take you on a ride to the sunny side of life.
Hover a bit while picking at the details on Hard Facts.
Take a detour through the exciting world of sports.
And get back on track with Let's Talk. Let's Talk.
Land you safely as we chit-chat into the morning on Chat Station. And then do it all over again on your number one talk, news and sports radio station, 92.3 Nigeria Info.
All right, welcome back. Well, of course, we are still discussing the statement from UBEC. That's the Universal Basic Education Commission, where the executive secretary of that commission, Hamid Boboyi, said that about 50% of schools in Nigeria lack basic furniture. And he regretted that pupils sit on the floor to take lessons. Well, of course, I have Mr. Isaac Owajuno over the telephone, and we are conversing or having this particular conversation right now. Now, Mr. Isaac, in the 2022 budget, the education sector got like 7.9% of the total budget. And this was actually seen as the highest so far since this present administration took over. That's the President Buhari administration. So we had that 7.9%. And of course, for UNESCO, that's the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, the benchmark is 15 to 20% of a country's annual budgets, which the president before now said he was going to, he's more like committed to achieving. So, looking at this, is there something that maybe needs to be done to get the government to understand that education is very important? Because if for many years we keep earmarking just a little percentage to the education sector, and then we keep screaming, oh, there's insecurity here and there. And of course, we know when people are not educated, some other things will follow. Is there something that maybe needs to be done? That's what I'm just looking at. Maybe there's a way it needs to be tabled before those of them at the helm of affairs, so that they can really understand that education needs to be given that attention. Because we're not there yet. We're not even close to getting there.
You see, every country has a development plan. This development plan may be technological, as the case may be now, because ICT is ruling the world currently. It could be economical, okay? It could be scientific. But the key to all these is education. Education is actually the training of the mind. It means the liberation of the human soul from bondage. One educated man is better than 1 million rich people who are illiterate. That's actually the truth. Now, all over the world, government actually considers education as a social service. And as a social service that should be taken, because if it is actually undertaken in good faith, over time, the country will change. A very good example is Singapore. In one of the studies that I did in Singapore, Singapore is not necessarily an oil-producing country. The best they had was port. But if you look at the Human Development Index of Singapore, you will discover that over 75% of the people are educated. Remember, they had their independence in 1963, and Nigeria had its own independence in 1960. Now, that takes me back to the argument of one of these scholars. His name is Patrick Wilmot. He said, the more I look, the more I understand that the problem of Africa is not necessarily the absence of ideology, but the necessity of, you know, a functional ideology that is needed to carry the people through. Education is an ideology our government, past and present, have not really pursued with vigor, apart from the days of Awolowo. Remember that it was actually Awolowo that brought the West to the limelight. Today, when you talk of people who are educated in Nigeria, I'm not saying there are no professors in the eastern part, but I can tell you at least 70% of the people in the West are more enlightened and educated than the other part, such that even an old woman can read the Yoruba Bible, which you can't find in this part of the world. Now, in answer to your question, this is exactly what we need to do. If the benchmark is between 16 and 20%, that UNESCO has actually prescribed. Remember, this is a recommendation by UNESCO. Nobody is telling the Nigerian government that Nigerian government must do this 16%, but at least it should have been closer to at least 15. Knowing fully well that the government still has as much as 85% of the total national budget to actually spend on other areas. The money that are spent by politicians, where are they coming from? If you channel that money into education, don't you know what our society will look like? I don't know whether I get the point I'm making.
Yeah.
The money that are spent by members of the National Assembly
all the functionaries of government, if you channel it just a tiny part, 3% of it into education, Nigeria will be a changed place. That is the truth. So if we want us to improve funding education, we must set our priorities right. Does it make any sense that somebody is building, is building a rail line from here to Nigeria Republic, and then the people in that place who are supposed to use the rail line are not going to school? Does it make any sense? It does not make any sense. Economically, it does not make any sense, because if the people are enlightened, you can do what you want to do online and then get the transaction and the money will come in. That's exactly what it is. Government must set its priority right. Government must budget appropriately. Government must consider education as a need, not as a luxury, like what we are doing currently. That is the only way we can actually improve on funding education.
So how about the people now, right? Because when we also talk about education, it's not just the building that we're looking at. And it's not just the government, what the government is doing or not doing. The other players also, we have the teachers and maybe the non-academic staff as well. But especially looking at the teachers now, is there a role that they can also play? Now, this is what I'm looking at. I have seen some videos on social media or pictures now of some teachers who were in some places that were quite remote, and they just had to improvise, find a way to just make sure that the children are well educated, because they didn't have the facilities. They didn't have what they were supposed to get from the government, but they knew that this is what the children need. And then they had to just go all out, take that step to make sure that they brought what the kids needed to them. Now, I've also seen situations whereby people, especially core members, though, they would bring out their own money, go to schools or in a particular school where they are teaching at the time when they are serving, to just provide one or two things that they feel are needed in that school. So in what way can the teachers play a role, seeing that the government is not coming forth as fast and as much as they should? What can the teachers do?
The teachers are doing a lot and can still do a lot in terms of education, but the teachers cannot fund education.
Okay.
What the teachers will definitely do is that the teachers will be involved in the delivery of knowledge, which is key, their primary assignment.
Mm-hmm.
The teachers, they do a lot in terms of preparing the materials for learning. Sometimes they go the extra mile by improvising for themselves to get the job done. All schools are shut down now. Most of them are preparing for Easter break. Teachers are still in school doing preparatory classes for those in GS3 and SS3. The teachers are doing a lot. But the teachers, we need to encourage them so that they can do more. And the only way you can encourage them is to pay their salaries on time. How do you explain it to students or maybe pupils in your class when you know you have not taken your breakfast in the morning and then you are coming to the class to come and teach? Like the adage goes, a hungry man is an angry man. And it is not just for one day. Think of a situation where teachers have not been paid their entitlement, and those who are retired are actually treated as social, misfit in the society because they are not wise. Or those who are in the profession currently are being looked at as those who are lazy and they don't have any other thing to do other than to go to a place, stay 6 hours and go away like that. No, the teachers, we need to improve on their welfare. If you improve on their welfare and pay their salary promptly, teachers can go the extra mile. Examination is by the corner, now wife is by the corner. Most teachers are having sleepless nights, especially those in the sciences. Some of them have moved away from where they are to the school, preparing materials, trying out experiments that are necessary for the children to do well in order to avoid exam malpractice. But by the end of the day, what you see is that you say, well, they have not done well, this particular school has not done well, you have to do the extra mile. But we consider it, take for instance, in this particular state, it's a known fact that those in public schools actually go to school for only 6 hours. Only those in private schools and others are those who spend more than 8 hours in the school, and sometimes they close by 4 o'clock. But if their salaries are not paid, they are burdened by the issue of rent and then transportation, inconsistent government policy, and the day-to-day, inflationary rate that is eroding their pay. So these are some of the problems that are affecting why it looks as if they are not doing more. But internally, they are doing a lot. Some of them are at the risk of their health and still teaching. And we will not stop teaching until the children are there. Then think about the teacher's reward. the slogan that the teacher's reward is in heaven is also affecting the motivation of most teachers. How can you say that the teacher's reward is in heaven and the person you taught 2 days ago, or maybe 2 years ago, or 10 years ago, is occupying the government house and is telling you that you have to wait until after 12 years before your gratuity will be paid? These are some of the things that are disturbing, you know, teachers from actually putting in their best. But still, as professionals that we are, we still continue to do our best, knowing fully well that one day we'll produce the right quality manpower that will move our country forward.
Hmm. Now, talking about funding now for education, who else can be a part of the funding for education in Nigeria?
Let me bring you to your notice that there are so many bodies that are doing, you know, enough in terms of education. The United Nations is actually doing that.
Mm.
Just like you mentioned, UNESCO.
Yes.
UNESCO has been at the forefront of support. There are establishment and organizations, even Commonwealth of Nations, have actually granted scholarship to schools, and sometimes they supply materials, they provide funding and grants to schools so as to improve the quality of teaching and learning, or even give a facelift to infrastructural development. They come as counterpart funding. Government will have to pay maybe like 15%. The other 85% will be paid by this body because they don't trust our government, that our government will spend the money if given to them judiciously. I don't know that I get the point.
Mm.
There are so many bodies that are involved, like the community where we live, or for instance, in this state now. You know, a lot of oil companies are doing a lot in terms of funding and supporting education. The fact that they are not mentioned does not mean that they are not doing a lot. NNPC could have also done a lot, but NNCC is boarding because it's a unidirectional organization. It's actually tilted towards one particular area, not for everybody in Nigeria. So there are so many bodies, spirited bodies. There are NGOs that are involved in education. One of them is IFESH, International Foundation for Education and Self-Help. They are involved. I also know of an NGO, PNI, that is involved in educational services in the Opobonko area, maybe some time ago. So there are so many. All government needs to do is to look out for educational partners that can be very supportive and are willing to also run with them. And government must be very honest in its approach. When these people bring money, the money should be spent for the reason why it is there. Who said somebody cannot actually wake up and help, maybe in a particular school in Eche, where it was mentioned some time ago that for 4 years the school has been shut down and they have only 3 persons in that place and the government has been paying salary? People are there that are willing to fund it, but the truth is that, are we accountable when public money is given to us? Are we accountable? These are some of the problems people face. If you have the money, it's not accountable, and after 3 years, somebody is coming back again to say you are doing the same thing all over again. That looks like a waste of energy and strength. That's the truth.
All right. Well, of course, thank you, Mr. Isaac. But you do stay on the line, please. Let's hear from every other person who's been listening. The numbers to call are 0817-923-0002. 0817-923-0002 and 0817-923-0003. You can also drop your comments via Facebook and Twitter at Nigeria Info 92.3. Please turn off your radio set.
Yeah, very good evening, Constance.
Good evening.
Just a quick one. I want to correct an impression here.
All right, go on.
Your guess sounded as if government should treat education as a social service. It cannot be. It cannot be. You know why? If you open a copy of the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, Section 18, beginning from Subsection 3, will tell you that it is the constitutional responsibility of government to provide education. It's not a social service. It cannot be a social service.
Okay, I think you got him mixed up there. He is saying that the government treats education as though it's a social service. That's what he said.
Okay. So, okay. Put it strongly now. Government must begin to take education, you know, as a constitutional duty. Until we get to that point where anybody who, particularly for the governors, I know why I'm mentioning the governor now, because if you look at the act, the UB Act you rightly referred to, it mandated every state government to establish the state
Universal Basic Education Board.
And it's expected also that in funding our education in Nigeria, The arrangement is a counterpart funding. The federal government should bring 50%, and then the state must bring their 50%. Perhaps what the executive secretary of UBEC didn't tell us is that most states are not meeting up their counterpart funding responsibility. That's what we have on record. That even if UBEC have the money there from the consolidated revenue fund, the states, most state governments, and, you know, bringing their counterpart funding in order to assess their funds and then run the primary education as it ought to be. And that's on one side. I have come to, as an educationist myself, confess that education is also too important to be left wholly in the hands of politicians.
Okay.
How do I mean? Constance, what you have today as the community secondary schools in River State started during the Second Republic of Melford Okilo, and communities were responsible for, you know, building those schools and then handed over to government. Why have we looked away from that? I give you an example. KNC, the Comprehensive College, or whatever it is called, KNC, Carbide National College, I think that is the right, you know, was solely powered by the Carbide people as a community. So why is it that members of our communities aren't interested again in partnering government, so to say, in making sure that we have quality education?
Mm-hmm.
And again, you get just made reference to Eche in person. Constance, go to Eche. The government of Rotimi Chibika Amechi built and furnished a school there. As you go to the school now, it's been completely vandalized.
Right.
Completely vandalized. And I don't think that the insurgents did that. And I don't think that Boko Haram people did that.
Okay.
People who are from that community should tell us what happened to that school.
All right. Thank you. I need to take some other calls.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you very much for calling. On WhatsApp. All right. While my WhatsApp line is still refreshing, let's take a call here. Hello. Welcome to Hard Facts.
Yes, so good afternoon, the very distinguished Constance. Mega, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. You're welcome.
Yes, I remember Temple, okay, very important.
All right, Temple.
I think I want to appreciate your guest so far. You know, I think most of the issues that you talked about is indeed affecting me and affecting my community, precisely Umechem and the chair at large. But where I have an issue is when you talk about the monitoring, either from the government, from the NGOs. I think there is a lot of, let's say, a huge compromise when it comes in terms of the NGOs who are partnering. Sometimes most of these companies that are host to communities, and they pretty much they have their own corporate responsibility as far as the community service is concerned. And whenever contracts are being issued in terms of building structures like a classroom block, in terms of furnishing it like accepting the classroom block, and you know, making sure that there are good desks and other things, you know, that enhance learning. I think there is a lot of compromise on that aspect. Because when it comes to my community, a situation where a company will award the school project, a situation whereby a company will make a budgetary allocation to furnish that school that is used. Nothing at the end of the day you will see. And then big money has extension. And they see some inspectors, some supervisors coming. No, I tell you well that there is nothing on gang. But they go back, they give sacrifices, all because of they have been induced with lifestyle dangerous. And for me, which is causing a lot of pressure, a lot of commotion within the context of education. And within the context of a learning environment, we are in a state, and no matter precisely, we have over the road, and I'll continue to speak out. In a situation where these multinationals will give us, you know, scholarship, in a situation where these multinationals will give us all things, you think the students in that community will not say anything. But it's a record somewhere that indeed this company has given us. My sister, it is a problem to us. And as a city chairman, sometimes we call it community trust. We interface within the community, between the communities and this multinational. Sometimes this multinational don't try to follow it up. Because for myself, I have another position community. It's more or less there in the hand of the multinational to fund education and assist with the community because of their technological exploration. But my dear sister, we have suffered the road. All like water has been crying. A situation where there is no water. Because of the school, no water. What do you expect of Egyptians to use? Or what do you expect an entire community to do? Then you have no water.
Okay. All right, thank you very much, Temple Okere.
That's a problem. We should do the needful and stop them from promise and live for us.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for calling Temple. Oh, my goodness. So much passion there when he's speaking. Mr. Isaac, are you still on the line?
I'm with you.
Okay. So I have a message here on WhatsApp. This person says, education does not have political value. That's why politicians relegate it. It's a message from Mr. John. And he actually sent a picture. He says, not enough seats. He's showing a classroom and some students are standing, some are sitting on stones. And I can see the ceiling. The ceiling is almost finished. The blackboard. Okay. Let me just read the message. He says, not enough seats. Ceiling is wonderful. UBE Secondary School in my community. What is the name of your community? You didn't tell me that part. But thank you all the same for the message. Someone here says, I associate myself with the findings of UBEC, the state school, Opu Oko, in Kana, local government area of River State. Besides the non-availability of basic furniture for teaching and learning, is also plagued with non-teaching personnel. For over 6 years, counting, when the last and only teacher retired, there is no replacement till date. The children of the poor that have no access and resources to private schools in Bori are there, constituting nuisance to the society. I think our people in the newsroom will have to go check out this particular school you're talking about. Another person says, I don't know, are you the same person who's calling me Sandra on Facebook? Anyway, well, you say good evening. In as much as none of our leaders have been given, well, thank you all the same. My name is Godstime from Ndashi Eche. Honestly, Nigeria education is on a failed side. Nigerian government and politicians don't care about our educational system. Currently now, universities have shut down in the whole of Nigeria, and very soon, polytechnics will still join the strikes. And that is to tell you how bad our educational system is. All right, Mr. Isaac, let me get your reaction to some of the statements so far.
Thank you so much. The first caller didn't tell us his name, but I'm happy you were able to correct the misconception that education is treated as a social service. But not necessarily a social service. Education is a constitutional right and it's a duty on the part of government to educate its citizens. So, one. Secondly, education is broad. What I mean broad in the sense that, you see, it's a subject of interest to so many people. So people can actually begin to turn in what they have to say. But I think it's good for us to stay on the line. The line is, we are talking about UBEC. UBEC has actually raised an alarm. I think what I actually would appreciate is an all-inclusive solution where we all begin to suggest way to move our education forward. Because these children are our future. They are the key to the future that we desire. Now, if we condemn government and then from here to tomorrow, it will definitely not produce the same result. And that is why we now begin to look at it. That whatever we are doing now are actually built up to 2023, giving us informed knowledge of what to vote for. And then what not to vote for. Anybody that is not promoting education does not stand a chance on my own side. I don't know of your side. Because education is the key to the future. But I'd like to address the issue to Kerry. The issue of scholarship by oil multinational company is a function of decision. Allocation of project to community is also a function of agreement. In law, there's something you call consensus addendum. There must be a meeting of the mind between the community and others. What do you say when the contractor to a particular project is not sure of himself and perhaps he's not sure whether he will be able to get to his destination? Even if you are paying him in billions, he will not come to the place. So we also need to work with our people, talk to our youth, educate our men and women, let them receive those who are coming to work in our community as helpers of work, not necessarily as businessmen.
And that we must be also very, very fair in our dealing, because the society is multi-plural. Those who will give the job to, are they competent enough to do the job? These are things we need to consider before we begin to talk of oil companies. But I stand here to actually say that sometimes whatever oil companies are doing to you, they are actually corporate social services. It's a function of what they generate from your community. That is where they raise the resources to actually prosecute the project that is being executed in your community. So we must all embrace peace to make sure that we get the most out of these oil companies. Because whether we like it or not, if they go with the money they are supposed to spend on our community today, somebody else must collect the money in another place. That's the truth.
Now, some time ago, we had a conversation that also concerned education, and I had Ikechi Nwogu here in the studio. So he suggested something that sounded like what one of the callers made mention of. The caller was talking about community people coming together to fund education in their community. I remember he talked about how people who have schooled in a particular place, what are they called again? Alumni. So he said they could come together and they are bringing a certain amount of money. And from what he says it doesn't even have to be in millions. It could just be 1,000 naira from one person. He said when you just look at maybe 100 or 1 million people that have graduated from, let's say, let me use the universities as an example now. If we have about 1 million people that have graduated from Uniport, and then each of them get to give back to the school just 1,000 naira per year. And this happens over time. You know, it helps the school to get some amount of money to also be able to fix whatever and also boost the education in that school without necessarily waiting for government. What do you think?
Well, it's a good suggestion. Like I said, that education is an all-inclusive topic that some of us are involved in. But I have a different opinion and view. I'm not trying to dispute the case of Kolechi Nwogu, like you have mentioned. Now, if you take statistics, how many people have graduated 10 years ago have actually found a job in the society? Where are they going to raise the money when they are even looking for how to make out their daily living?
Just 1,000 naira in 1 year.
1,000 naira in 1 year.
Or 500 naira in 1 year.
No, I'm coming. I have a position.
Okay.
That's number one. But number two, I think the way Nigeria is today, you give people money based on the integrity and trust that you have where they are. Why give money to somebody who is a spendthrift? It's not possible now. I want you to say you are giving chicken change. That's the Nigerian language. So, I also dare to say that most schools here don't have old boys association. Do we? Very hard. Except maybe for the schools of the 60s. But all the schools that were established in the 70s, late 70s, 80s, especially during the civilian period, don't pay much attention to old boys association. That's the umbrella body by which they could be organized so that phone can come.
All right.
Even most people who are university graduates don't belong to their university alumni until 15 years.
Hmm.
So when will they raise the money? It's an opinion though.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Isaac Owadiuno. Thank you for being here today on the show to have this conversation with me.
Thank you so much, Rivers people. Let's collectively put our hands together to move education forward in Nigeria. Thanks.
All right. Thanks again.